That was Ruby and the Romantics, Hey There Lonely Boy, on this anniversary of her birth. And many of us of our generation remember dancing very slow and red lights to the basement of that song a long time ago. But let's talk about something very serious that's happening in our society now. You know, one of my producers commented the other day, whenever there was a mass shooting or another murder in Baltimore of horrendous nature, we would stop and talk about it on the air. And now we don't, because it's happening so much. It's becoming part of the fabric of society. The question is, what is happening to us that we have all these mass shootings across the United States of America? What's happening to us that places like Baltimore, if it was a nation, would have as many murders as Guatemala? If New Orleans was a country, it would have the third largest murder rate on the planet Earth. And whether it is the crimes every day that take the lives of young black and brown men in the streets of our communities, or whether it's these mass killings going on across the country, or the fact that every 28 hours a young person, a person of color, is killed by somebody in a private or public security force. Something is happening in terms of violence in our midst, and why is it happening this way? We are joined by Jessica Klein, who's Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Adelphi University, author of the book The Bully Society, School Shootings and the Crisis of Bullying in Our Schools. And her website is jessicakline.com, which offers a chart of school shootings across the country. Kimberly Armstrong is with us again in the studio. She's an inspirational speaker, author, consultant, who lost her son to violence in Baltimore and has been an activist against violence and to finding justice for her children and all children for many, many years, and has been on the show, coming on the show for almost 20 years. Good to see you again, Kimberly, and welcome.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Dr. Lawrence Brown joins us, political activist, public health consultant, assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University. Dr. Lawrence Brown is always here when we need him on the program, and good to have you back, Lawrence.
Hey now.
Drive safe while you're talking, please.
Yes, sir.
410-319-8888. Write to chsteinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page or tweet us at Mark Steiner, because we need you, Lawrence. So take care. Be careful. 410.
I'll keep that in mind.
410-319-8888. So let's go around the room here. And Jessica Klein, I'll start with you. I mean, what is it you think that makes America appear, if not in fact be, one of the most violent societies on the planet?
You know, I think there's quite a lot of reasons, and I mean, it is important to recognize how violent we are in relationship to other countries. I mean, such severe proportions. I think it's really important to look at just what are our cultural norms. You know, there's so much in our society that's about being the best, being better than other people, being competitive. We used to have quite a bit more about collaboration, about responsibility for one another, commitment to the greater good and social service. And I think it's not unconnected. I mean, clearly the availability of guns makes mass shootings much more treacherous. But I think the larger issue is that people are not encouraged to be compassionate towards one another. People are encouraged to see one another as enemies vying for their spot to be the best. And that sense of competition does little to feed our need as social animals for social connection, for social support, for being part of a community. And it's, I believe very strongly, that the ramifications are as dreadful as we're seeing right now.
Kimberly.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what she said, especially about the responsibility for one another, is that somehow we have lost that sense of compassion for one another, and that life, it seems to just be not valuable anymore. It's like you take someone's life and some people just have no remorse. It's like it's okay. And I think also too is that the media shows so much killing and shooting that people have not just become desensitized to it. It's just that now it's like a sense of normality. I mean, it's almost like we expect to hear multiple or mass shootings on the news every single day. And I think that's something that has to change.
Lawrence Brown?
Well, you know, I would say that America has always been a violent nation. Ever since the genocide and the taking of land of Native peoples, you can go back to the Salem witch trials, of course, enslavement of African American population. And if you read your history books, you know, America's always been violent. We just haven't had the media that we have now. And even the media that we did have then didn't always report some of the daily massacres, the lynchings that took place, the way people would die in droves. And I think that's one particular thing that we have to keep in mind is to sort of look at it through a historical lens. America's not just now becoming a violent nation. It has always been a violent nation. And the other thing I think is masculinity, looking at how men are reared and raised in this society, the way boys are socialized, power is a central part of the male identity. And what happens when men are not able to play the roles of traditional masculinity, which we know to be being a protector, a provider, and a breadwinner? When men are not able to fulfill those roles, that constitutes a real mental health crisis. And so I believe a lot of the shootings that we see today, these mass shootings and murders, arise out of a situation where male identity is being challenged. And when male identity is challenged, we know from the literature that men often overcompensate to restore their manhood.
I'm going to come back to what you just said, Lawrence, in a moment, because I think that there's a fundamental shift here in the world, and especially when you take issues of poverty and dislocation, the role that plays in violence with men, and unfortunately increasingly with women in our society, mm-hmm. but with men. But just for a moment, when you look, we had an historian lined up, but he couldn't make it. So let me just throw this question out anyway. And Jessica, do you think any more violent than we've been in the past as a society in America or as a world, or are we just more aware of it? Is it the firepower that we see that makes it greater for individuals to be able to carry out whatever aggression it is? I mean, this is something I think people are wrestling with, because we have this notion of once it was better.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are so many different ways to measure that, and personally I feel like it's a less important question. The violence is at such a high rate. People are dying every single day. You know, I agree. You know, my whole book also was about the culture of masculinity. I think, as you just suggested,
the bully society. Yeah.
Yeah, the bully society. The culture of masculinity is also a high pressure on women today, you know, to be competitive, to be aggressive, to be dominant, to be better than other people. You know, it used to be only for men, but I think in some ways both women and men are discouraged from being anything resembling what has been considered feminine, being empathic, being compassionate, being concerned for other people. I think women are just as discouraged from those kinds of values today. You know, we've seen since the 80s social isolation has tripled, depression has increased, soared, anxiety has soared, empathy has decreased significantly, trust has decreased significantly among both men and women. And I think, you know, exactly as was just said, you know, it's a recipe for violence when you tell men, and now women as well, that you have to be powerful, you have to be successful, and then you have all kinds of discrimination and other obstacles, poverty, et cetera, that make it impossible to basically perform manhood in that particular way. And so violence is a basically a fast food route to manhood and masculinity, and I think more and more people feel like the only way to achieve masculinity, to perform masculinity, is to use violence, because mainstream avenues in society are actually not accessible.
And I think that's so, so very true. Just from my own personal experience, I have an 18-year-old nephew and who was about to become a father, mm-hmm. and me and him had a discussion, is that he's so frustrated because he can't find a job. You know, he wants to work. He wants to take care of, you know, his family. And he's so frustrated. So he just walks around sometimes almost like he's in a daze, you know, because there's so many things that he wants to do, but he has other challenges. He has been incarcerated. He's been a part of the juvenile system. So he has a record. You know, so when you talk to a lot of young people and when you hear them talking about and saying things like, I'm hustling because I need money and I can't get a job. You know, we helped him fill out a couple of applications, and one of them was with Royal Farms. And they stated that, you know, you have to do everything online. So while he was going through the process, there was a couple of, like, a questionnaire. And the reason why he didn't get the job was because he didn't, the questionnaire or one of the questions he didn't, you know, they didn't like the answer or whatever. So I'm thinking, like, how challenging can it be to, or what is it that you need to work at Royal Farms. Yeah, you understand? So I think that we have become so technical is that we have lost track of some of the just basic sense of back in the day you had people who couldn't read, but they got a job. They could work. They could do something. And when you keep holding people back and now you have all this aggression and anger and depression and animosity with young people, they internalize that and they start hurting one another.
Well, both of you just said, and Lawrence, I'm going to turn to you here, and it made me think of something, and it might sound like a little off center of what you and Jessica just said, but I don't think it is. What I'm hearing, what the stories that Kimberly is talking to us now about Lawrence, and what Jessica said earlier, and we always talk about how, and it's really real. I'm not diminishing this at all because it is at the heart of many things. How racism and class in this country really define violence and many other things, and what happens, and especially with race and poverty in America, and dislocation for young black and brown men in the society, as Kimberly was just discussing. But what is the connection, do you think, for the three of you, between that and the overall sense of violence in America, where a lot of the violence that takes place that we see in the headlines, 5 people killed in this school, 6 people killed in this community, just, you know, shot up, and the perpetrators could be white, they could be Latino, they could be anybody. So what is the connection between those things? Is there a connection?
There's certainly a connection and the one common denominator is that they're usually men with mass shootings. I don't think we've had a female mass shooter yet. So I think that there is something to understanding the role of masculinity and the identity issue that many men have, especially when you combine that perhaps with mental illness, access to guns, and when someone feels that they've been wronged in some sort of particular way, and they have no outlet to reach out, to calm down, to release anger, they begin plotting. And oftentimes people see red flags and they're not, they don't really pull that person aside. So it does speak to sort of a disconnect that we have in our society, but I think it also still speaks to the role we have for men in our society. And we're not really, I think, honing in on the way masculinity is connected to power and how we need to find ways and outlets for men to release anger and to be able to become healthy and stable again after going through a traumatic experience.
And I want to add to that, I think that the common thing for me is what I see is survival.
What do you mean?
People want to survive. Whether they're in pain or if someone has wronged them, they want to come out as being a survivor. And when you see some of the shootings and a lot of things that's going on in the inner city, mm-hmm. it's usually because people get to a point of, I got to survive. I have to eat. I have to pay bills. I have to help do something in my family, for my family, whether it's for my mother, my grandmother, for myself. And then when you see a lot of the mass shootings, they have to survive. So whether it's if a young person is being bullied in school, they want to survive. When you think about some of the men who have killed their families, it's because I have to survive, or maybe I have not been a good provider. So therefore, if I cannot take care of my family, then I will take them with me when I go, because who's going to take care of them once I'm not here? I can't do it. I'm not doing a good job at it. So I think it's a mechanism of survival.
So, Jessica, how's that mechanism of survival correspond to what you've been writing about?
It's exactly what I'm writing about. I think, the social norm right now is, again, not for supporting one another and connecting with one another. It's about being famous. It's about being the best. A lot of the kids who committed school shootings and even the workplace shootings, they talked about how now they're going to be known. There are kids who committed school shootings who said, even from prison, I feel more respected now. And I think that speaks to an unfortunate decay in American values that, so there's so much pressure on not just being the best, but being famous and being known for something. And that's actually not what feeds the soul. That's not what actually makes people feel fulfilled and feel like happy, content, balanced individuals. But that's what the message is everywhere, that if you're not known, if you're not famous, if you're not the best, you're not acceptable. And I think you know, many of the school shooters, you know, there's always the talk about how they were outcasts, how they were alone, how, mm-hmm. you know, they didn't have much connection. And there's very little work in schools or anywhere, really, to help people connect with one another, to help people have meaningful relationships. You know, most kids, even in schools, they right away get, you know, pulled into popularity contests and who is most known and who is most visible and who is most powerful, and many of those powerful, popular people are some of the most depressed and most disconnected of anybody, because none of it is about developing relationships with one another. It's all about being visible. And I think it's true, the pressure to be so successful, again, in both males as females, has caused so many to commit suicide, to commit mass murder, you know, and it's just the wrong focus. It does not feed the human soul, and people feel like failures because they're not the best, and only one person can be the best in any given contest, so that means everybody else is going to feel like a failure. So I think in this context, we have recipes for creating violence after violence.
We have to take a very brief break here. Should we take a break now? Get into a call first? Take a break first. Take a break? So we're going to take a very brief break. We're going to come right back to our conversation. And what I would like to explore with our guests here, and then go to Clarence, who's our caller up, and read this email from Lauren, an African, is another caller waiting to get online, is our thoughts about then what is our response to this as a society? What can people who are thinking and feeling around this issue and have an analysis come up with ideas that we can address with the rest of society to maybe ameliorate some of this that we're in the midst of? We can take a break. We're listening right now to Bukka White, who was born on this day.
Man, oh man, have you ever been to Spain? Where the joy of laughing people makes you happy again. Women so pretty, even more so at night. While in the streets their dance brings on to you such delight. And man, oh man, before you go home, catch your flight on to see the wonderful.
That is The Persuasions. Man, oh man, is that piece. And The Persuasions, of course, this is Jimmy Bro Hayes' birthday. He was born in 1943, who is one of the singers in The Persuasions, one of my favorite groups of all time. So, you know, in our interviews, we play the men who were born, men and women who were born and died in this day, and the music they brought to us. We are here with Jessica Klein, Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Adelphi University, author of the book Bully Society, Shootings, School Shootings and Crisis of Bullying in American Schools, Her website, Jessie Klein, JessieKlein.com, is a place to go to really understand the staggering statistics of what we face. We'll be linking to that on our website. Kimberly Armstrong's with us, who lost her son to violence in Baltimore, has been an advocate in this community and fighting against violence, if that's not an oxymoron, but fighting against violence in our community for a long time, inspirational speaker, author, and consultant. Dr. Lawrence Brown, political activist and public health consultant, assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health Policy and Management at Morgan State University. We've also now been joined by WEA host and community activist and minister Anthony McCarthy, and one of my partners in crime. Good to have you all with us. And the number is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Lauren just wrote in, it seems very straightforward to me. First, if we want to stop, reduce violence, we must end poverty and create jobs that pay a living wage for the young guys so they have positive choices. And second, we must address the issue of gun control. People seem reluctant to discuss this, but it is instrumental in reducing shooting deaths. So let's tackle these two issues. These both go to the point of what do we do, Jessica Klein, and then we'll go around the room here.
I mean, I think those two obviously would be excellent solutions, you know, but I would suggest necessary but not sufficient. I mean, obviously, the accessibility to guns makes everything worse. You know, the murder tolls exponentially rise. Poverty, you know, makes people more desperate and more depressed. And so, you know, helping people to have a living wage is basic to having, you know, a reasonable lifestyle. But again, I think the issue is larger than that as well, because people are lonely. The number of people who have absolutely nobody to talk to about anything, you know, about things that are important to them has literally tripled. 50% of our population are considered to have marginal or inadequate support, you know, bordering on mental illness because of the lack of support that they have. the statistics are staggering, the rates of depression and anxiety rising. And we just need to be able to reach out to one another. We need to be able to create more community. There's a huge amount that we absolutely have to do systemically, as your writer suggested, but we also need to reach out to one another. We need to rush less, care about one another more, take responsibility for helping one another. And weirdly enough, it's not so easy. You know, as I talk about in my classes often, you know, if somebody asks a student to help them because they're having a hard day, that student has to think about, you know, do I go late to my class? Do I go late to my exam? Do I make a personal sacrifice just to help this person? Because we're all so overscheduled. We're all so busy. We're all so focused on the achievement that we're expected to accomplish that actually stopping to help one another means a cost to ourselves. And I think our society needs to change its priorities so that being there for one another is as important as anything else that we do, and we don't make it such a vicious cycle that in order to help somebody, we have to, you know, undermine whatever accomplishments we're focusing on.
Lawrence, then we'll go to Anthony and come back to Kimberly here in the studio.
Well, I agree with everything that's been said, but I still believe that we really need to focus on re-engineering masculinity. When you have an identity that's surrounded or circumscribed by power, and the whole notion about around me and man is that you're going to be in control, then you have a problem. You're going to have problems when you're not in control. And I think that's something we really got to really aim at. We talk about entitlement in this society. Well, what happens when you have people who are who feel entitled, and then things don't work out the way that that you think that they should? And I think that becomes a real issue. You know, it's not the people that are in urban America usually that are committing a lot of these mass shootings.
Right.
And I think, again, that's because the brothers in the hood don't feel entitled to all the benefits that America has. You know, that's not really the way we look at the world. We come through more of a lens of looking at how we're trying to fight to get those things. And that's not to say that homicides and murders don't occur, because they do. But a lot of these mass shootings occur with other men who, you know, again, perhaps feel entitled to certain things. And then when it doesn't happen or they feel disrespected, they begin to lash out. So I think we've got to re-engineer masculinity, combine power with gentleness, with respect, with decency. And we got to socialize that from birth.
Let me go to Anthony. I'm coming to Kimberly. We'll open the phones to you again. Clarence, you're the first caller up. And let's go to Anthony. He's just called in. Anthony, good to have you with us, brother. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Mark, and all your wonderful guests. I agree with everything everyone is saying, with the exception of gun control. I do think that we have to find a way to make civility a priority, and not only a priority, but part of our innate culture again. I think that we find, and Mark, whenever I go into communities in Baltimore, neighborhoods in Baltimore, and I talk to particularly young men, there is an underlying rage that exists based on their inability to access resources, to enjoy the quality of life that they see presented to them in magazines, on television, in popular culture, and they can't figure out why this is not happening. And then they bump up against the system of government and really, I would say, not just government, but our culture, that tells them that they aren't entitled to access these basic quality of life issues like employment and education. And that really does play itself out. We may not be seeing the mass shootings being done by the brothers in the hood, as one of your guests just said, but we see violence almost every day in our city. That is acting itself out based on that. And the other thing I would add, Mark, is that it's very quick and easy to say gun control. And I think I and a lot of other people definitely support common sense gun control that keeps the hands out of people who are suffering from mental illness, people who have a propensity to violence or a criminal background. But I think gun control really is just a Band-Aid to a much broader conversation that we have to have around not access to guns, but our communities, our country is awash in guns. We've got to find a way to limit the production of guns, especially semi-automatic weapons or military-style weapons. But I think the conversation of keeping guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens who want to either be use it for sport, protect their home, their family, their livelihood, is a non-starter for me.
You know, I think that we continue to talk about the same things over and over and over and over again. We talk about eliminating poverty. We talk about creating jobs. We talk about how you know, the limited of resources that so many of our young people have. And I always question or have the issue with what do we do and how do we do it? Because we've been talking about these issues for a very, very long time. And this is just my personal opinion. I think that we really need to have a revolution. I think we need to have a revolution. We need to go back to some of the basics. We need to stop boycotting people. We need to stop spending our money and resources, because there's a lot of people that are getting rich and richer off a lot of people's pain. And if we stop funneling and giving them our money, because money will hurt rich people, and that's the way that you get their attention. That's the way they listen. Our politicians, we have to stop voting for people and putting them back into office time and time again when they don't listen. This is a country that is just going downhill every single day. And if we, the people, do not rise up like the people did over in Egypt and some of the other places and some of the things we see that's going on in the world, we better get it together. And it's going to take the people who have a strong back and that are willing to do what we need to do to save not just us, but our children. So it goes back to a mechanism of survival.
Let us go to the phones. And that was a very powerful statement you just had. I wish we had another, we should stop the show and have another hour just to kind of deal with all the four things that were addressed by each one of our guests at this moment, because it's such a complex subject. And I think it grabs all of us, whether we live in urban communities where there's the violence in our communities every day with young people and other people who are just so lost and angry, whether it's the bullying that takes place in all of our schools and the violence that comes out of that. The cultural violence in this country that's been here from the beginning, I think Lawrence Brown said it as eloquently as has been said. You know, our violence in the very beginning against indigenous people and Africans were brought here as slaves and more. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. I'd just like to ask your guest, does it make any sense or help them to get an answer to the question of why we're so violent if you were to break it down in violence as a response in defense to a threat, violence with forethought to use violence as a tool to obtain a goal, violence born out of some psychological or emotional instability, and so forth down the line. And in response to what one of your guests was saying about the inability to enter into the mainstream, that's where that attitude, when you suggest adhering to a social norm, you get that response, I don't give a, you know what? It's part of that, you know, because that leads into that attitude, I don't care, you know, I'm going to do whatever's necessary for me to obtain my goal, whether it's violent or anything else. Does it make any sense to you? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's go. I know, Lawrence, you have to leave in about 2 minutes. So let me let you jump into it, and then we'll go right to Jessica.
Well, yeah, that the guest is right on point. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, violence is a response to certain conditions. It's certainly something that arises out of emotional distress. And again, when you have traditional masculinity in non-traditional times that we live in, where men perceive that they are losing power, where men perceive that they don't have the job that they used to have, when men perceive that they don't have the power, the authority that they used to have, and some of that, thank God, we don't have the power that we used to have, but when men are perceiving that as a loss and a threat to their identity, then traditional masculinity in non-traditional times, I suggest, is actually becomes a mental health threat, and that there then leads to increased violence.
And I know you have to run, Lawrence. Thanks so much for being with us. Look forward to having you in studio when you have a chance. And thanks so much for all you do for all of us here.
Thank you, sir. Looking forward to listening to the conversation.
And Jessica, let me let you pick up on that. I'm really curious, given the parts of your book that I've read, and I really look forward to having you on just to talk about the book in its totality. What about what Lawrence just said in response to Clarence? I mean, and how it fits in for you to what happens to us when we are feeling less than empowered? What happens to us when we are the bullied?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's saying exactly what I say in the book, though I take it a step further, that it's men are under the worst pressure in that sense because manhood is expected the most of males, but that we now have a culture of masculinity, that we really don't have much space at all in our society for anything associated with feminine. So where we might have perceived a masculine-feminine barometer or yin-yang, in the past, today it's pretty much masculine-masculine. There aren't really choices, to be empathic, to be gentle, to be kind. That's not really considered values or attitudes or behaviors that are valued in the workplace and schools and almost any social environment. And so kids and adults are taught that the only way to be recognized and to be respected is to be quote-unquote masculine, to be aggressive and to be powerful.
Well, let me ask this question, Jessica. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm just going to want Kimberly to pick up on this and go right to Anthony, because all three of you have something to say about this, and we'll get back to the phones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in our society, since especially in the last 40-odd years, we've seen the changes come that were wrought by the movements of the 60s. One of those changes was the women's movement, universally the women's movement, black, white, and everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that where women have been gaining power and not more than power, an influence on the way we think about our society, that it's slowly seeping in and changing. You see it in younger generations. So is part of the change that we have to go through, this kind of evolutionary change in a sense, with women becoming fully equal partners in the managing of our world?
We talked earlier about revolution, and obviously that's a big request, but on some level, it used to be when women talked about what the world would look like when women were in more leadership positions, we talked about having a more empathic society. We thought women leaders would be able to create more compassion in our world. And what we've found is that because, especially in the United States, you don't get to survive in the workplace unless you're aggressive. You don't get to survive if you're empathic and concerned about the other person. You only become CEO if you don't care about other people and if you do whatever it takes to get to the top. So you could be male or female or anything else, and you can't be empathic. And in some ways what has happened is that men and women both are expected, again, to be masculine. There's no space, whether you're female, transgender, anything else, to be kind and compassionate towards others. And in that sense, we do need a revolution. It's not a working social model. I think the cruelty and the violence and the hostility come from that cultural norm that we don't have any space for any other kinds of behaviors other than what's conventionally called masculine. If there's a barometer from kind, compassionate, empathic to also competitive and strong and powerful, it's different than when there's only one choice and masculinity is the only choice. And that's where we find ourselves today.
Mm. Yeah, and
Kimberly
and
then Anthony.
I think that's so very true, because when you look at a lot, especially young people, and how they have this sense of where they don't feel or they don't even sometimes recognize the feeling of having some type of empathy, sympathy, or compassion for one another. And I have to have the conversation with my daughter, who is 15, where she tells me sometimes, we had this conversation about how she doesn't feel like emotional sometimes. And that really struck me because I'm like, what do you mean? And I think it comes from also the environment. And, when I think of a lot of things, what's going on, especially with our young people and how they don't feel or have a sense of compassion, is because they're not really being taught. And, mothers are like the nurturers, and that's what we really try to teach our children. But when you combat that with some of the environments that they are faced with and compounded with, like, video games that are so violent, the violence that you see on TV and in movies and all those things. So how do we really get to a point where we combat that? And one of the suggestions that I think that we should look at and do more of, and that's conflict resolution, to teach our children how to sit down and have a dialogue and a conversation. Just because me and you disagree does not mean that I dislike you. It does not mean that I have a right to hurt you or harm you in some kind of way, whether it's to hit you, kick you, or shoot you, or stab you. And I think that's a missing component. And when I hear about things where young people, this, you know, we heard on the news where the young boy was, I think he pointed like he was shooting at someone or something.
And was suspended from school.
Yeah, and he was suspended from school. So instead
not the right solution.
So instead of having a dialogue with this young person, we take him out of school and suspend him.
Right.
I mean, and what for?
Right.
We also had an incident where the young boy was drawing a gun and he was suspended from school. I mean, it's kind of foolishness. And these are young kids. I think they were like in the sixth. They were like kindergartners or first graders or something like that. I mean, we have become crazy.
Anthony?
Well, I agree, again, with everything everyone is saying. And I think we have to use moments like Kimberly just gave us examples of the way that young people are acting out and imitating what they hear, see, and feel going on around them. Those are teachable moments that we have to invest in, emotionally invest in, as opposed to shutting down and expelling and bringing a sense of judgment down on children. Let's use those moments as an opportunity to really pour into their soul the things that are lacking and missing. The one thing I would give some pushback on when we start talking about hyper-masculinity in our society, and I definitely agree. We have given people the impression that you have to be cutthroat and that you have to be aggressive and you've got to step on people to find success in our society. And we celebrate that. We celebrate it in our books, in our movies, and in our examples, all of these motivational speakers who will tell you that they did everything except bury their opponents to become CEOs. And we celebrate that. We think that that is acceptable. What I also feel is that women, not all women, but a lot of women in our society who have been taught to be aggressive, when they are around men who are not as aggressive, when they are around men who do not subscribe to those attributes, there is a horrible, condescending emasculation that takes place. That wounds men and creates the kind of men who start to push back. And we are uncomfortable with those conversations in our society, a society that really supposedly built on these principles of equality but never have practiced them. But we've got to find a way to celebrate what all people bring to the table, male, female, but we are not comfortable with that. We are a competitive society that believes there are winners and losers. And if you did not win, if you do not fight in that workplace, if you do not marginalize people, then you're a loser. And that's what I see. That's what I experience when I'm around a lot of – I love strong women. I've worked for a lot of powerful, strong women. But when I watch them interact with men – they are imitating, they are trying to be like, and they picked up the attributes, the worst attributes of a lot of males in our society.
So I'm there's a question I have here. Let's go to get a phone call in here. Then I have a question about why do you think we've become so inured to it? Why do we kind of are almost numb to the violence around us with the news and everything else? It seems to have happened to a lot of us in this society and to society in general, whether it's the proliferation of MMA and watching men beat each other down in the ring. And I used to love watching MMA.
Me too, Mark.
And I'm a former boxer, and I used to love it myself. But there's something different than it was. Something switched in it all. Tyrone, you're on the air.
Go a whole new types of conversations again. And when it comes to placing the blame where it really belongs, we don't really want to accept it.
What's that mean?
I made this comment before that prior to us coming over here from Africa, black people. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I said prior to us coming over here from Africa, spirituality was always a way of life for black people. And that spirituality way of life for us is what kept us civilized. Well, we are no longer that spiritual people we once were. Now we are losing our sense of being civilized. But I have another question. You know what I mean? There are no gun shops in the hood. And for most people who are in the streets or in the hood, they had some kind of ruckus. And for the other segment of black people now in the hood who don't have police records or whatever, they're not really interested in going to the gun shops and buying guns anyway. So my question is, how are we getting our hands on so many guns to be able to do so much killing in the hood? Where are the guns coming from if we don't have no guns in our hood?
You know, I have asked the same question over and over again. I'm going to give you another personal experience. When my son was murdered, I'm just Miss Kim in my community, in my neighborhood. I had to almost pat some of these young people down before they came in my house because my son was popular. I knew, you know, and so I didn't know who shot my son. I didn't know why my son was shot. So it became a sense of we need to protect Miss Kim, right? We need to protect the house because we don't know what's going on. So I used to have to pat them down before they came in my house because I knew that some of them were packing, you know. So I used to ask them. Is that they would tell me it's easy to get a gun. We can walk out here right now and go around the corner and go get a gun. You know, so I'm like, it's easier for them to get a gun than it is for them to get a fresh piece of fruit or even a decent tomato. So I always have the same question. And my answer, I mean, this is what I just think. You know, it's a lot of infiltration in different organizations where they are selling illegal guns on the street. And they're not just selling little teeny guns. They are selling assault weapons. An assault weapon is called an assault weapon for a reason because it's designed to kill people.
Well, those guns are being sold and manufactured across the country and not being controlled at all by any
exactly.
kind of regulation. Let me very quickly, we have like 5 minutes left here. Thank you so much for your call, Tyrone. And Jessica, let me go to you and talk about your closing thoughts on this, and then go to Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much left to say. I mean, obviously, the accessibility of guns, you know, has to stop. But I want to also talk about, you know, women who are less empathic, who are aggressive, men who are less empathic, who are aggressive. I think it's not really worthwhile to say men are like this, women are like this, you know, and we've got to recognize how all of our society is expecting everybody to be hostile to one another. What I do in my classes now is, you know, when I teach about the decrease in empathy, the decrease in trust, the high depression, the high anxiety, the tripling of social isolation, I also teach nonviolent communication, which is about compassionate communication, connecting with one another. And my students are blown away by the experience of actually being empathic with another human being and what it feels like to be thoughtful and reflective about what they have done for other people or what other people have done for them and to focus on that for a few minutes. And so I think schools, workplaces, universities absolutely need to take responsibility for teaching new values that people are fulfilled by compassion and connection and community, and the visibility of fame is their misrecognized needs. We don't really need to be famous. We don't really need to be the best. We don't really need to be approved of or even liked. What we need is to be deeply connected with one another, and we spend almost no time in that space that is what feeds the human soul. And so our society is so distorted about what is important that people, for the most part, are just becoming more and more depressed and anxious and isolated when there's so much that's available to support one another, and everybody could start doing that right away for themselves and for each other. And I think, again, schools, workplaces, families all could start working on that and teaching one another how to be compassionate and make that a priority in our lives.
Very important, powerful thought, I think. And Anthony, we have a couple minutes left here. Your closing thought, please.
You know, Mark, I had trouble hearing what Jessica was saying. I only heard bits and pieces. No, that's okay. But I think that the parts I heard, she is so on point about this idea of compassion and connectedness. We've got to find a way, but the best way is for those who are in power, those who are public figures and have the ability, the eyes and the ears of so many people to live those lifestyles before us. And I think our president, when we beat this drum of war constantly, it sends a message. I think when the leading CEOs like Donald Trump and others are celebrated and honored for their behavior, we're sending a very clear message about our priorities. And I know Tyrone is very passionate about what he was sharing about spirituality in Africa and so on and so on. But I reject that. Mark, I have prayed with gang members. I have prayed with drug dealers. I have heard them and tears running down their face saying they want to reject the place they find themselves in.
Yes.
But they don't have an option. And I know that we know there are options, but in their minds, in their neighborhood, in their community, they feel those options are limited. They are as spiritual as our ancestors were spiritual. And so I believe that we have to honor that and celebrate that. They may have made different choices, but we've got to show the way. And when we have a voice like the Mark Steiner Show or the Anthony McCarthy Show, we have to be able to show powerful examples of when you choose love and when you choose compassion and when you choose brotherhood and sisterhood, there is a change that takes place, and there is a fulfillment that can come from that that makes us whole, not just as individuals, but makes us whole as a nation, as a world.
Anthony McCarthy is host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEA 88.9 FM. Dr. Jessica Klein is Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Adelphi University, author of the book The Bully Society, School Shootings and the Crisis of Bullying in American Schools. Kimberly Armstrong is a community leader who fights against violence in our community and lost her son to violence in this community. I want to thank all three of you for a really important conversation today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
We have to take a very brief break, and we will be right back. We're going out with the Flamingos, we're going to go out with the song "I Only Have Eyes for You." We'll be right back. Stay with us as we go to sound bites.
Are the stars out tonight?